So cropping is pretty much the first thing you do to, you know, to take a snapshot and turn it into, you know, a nice photograph. Because a lot of people take pictures, you know, without zooming in on something, or, you know, they just weren't close enough, or maybe there's only one interesting part of the photo. Gotta crop. It's all about the crop. And next, levels. Now, how many of you here actually have Photoshop? Anybody? Anybody else use any other photo editors? InShot Pro. And you guys?
The GIMP.
The GIMP?
Photoshop the GIMP.
Photoshop the GIMP. Okay. I've never used InShot Pro, but the GIMP has exactly the same tools, just in different places in the menu. Dialog boxes might be named differently, but it's exactly the same thing. All right. So, again, we got levels. So, we got a nice picture of a pretty girl, but there's lots of distracting background here, which we really don't need. So now it's a picture of the girl, not a picture of, you know, a girl standing in the backyard with a whole bunch of junk. The problem is her face around here, kind of dark. So we want to do levels. We go to Image, Adjustments, and Levels, or Control L. So let me move this dialog box so that it's more prominent. Okay. We've got three major controls here. Input levels, output levels, and channel. In this case, all we care about is input levels. Now, the input levels themselves have three major controls here. One of them, the first box, corresponds to that dot there. That's called the black level. This middle one here corresponds with the middle control, and that's called gamma. And then on the right, that's called white point. So here, let me show you what it does. Moving this white point here basically just tells Photoshop which level you want to be absolute white. So in this case, we want to move it over till the image is just light enough. Now, gamma, it's hard to explain what it does, so I won't. But if you move it to the left, your image gets lighter. Move it to the right, your image gets darker. In this case, you want to move it to the left, and voila, you know, girl's got a face with detail. And now this, see, we can slide that in. And now we've got a nice image. And if I undo, then you can see there's actually quite a difference between the original and the new one. Yeah, you have a question.
How do you feel about auto levels?
Auto levels actually doesn't do very much. I'll show you. Okay. That's all the auto levels did here. Right, it turned it from being sepia toned, which was an intentional option I set on the camera, to being a neutral gray. And why did it do that? Here, I'll show you. Because what auto levels does is it just takes this white thing and moves it, far enough left to the point where it would, hit these bumps here on the histogram, and it does the same thing with the black. Well, in this case, the histogram, already has enough detail on the right side, and it's got enough detail on the left side. So auto levels doesn't really do anything with it. And it's been my experience that most pictures that were taken with a digital camera, auto levels doesn't help with. Okay, so our next important thing here is color balance. And quite simply, that's for balancing your color. Does anybody here know what the white balance on their camera does? Okay, most people don't know. Well, basically, to your eye, anything can look white if it's just the brightest thing there. So, you know, so these incandescent lights up in the top of the room, they look white, and the sun looks white, but they're actually vastly different colors. And your camera doesn't really know which white your eye is looking at. So it just has to guess. Or you can tell it. Now, in this case here, that's a cute picture of a baby, right? But we can do better. Why? Because the white balance is off. And so we can easily fix the white balance by going images, adjustment, color balance, or control B. And how do you do all these settings? Well, actually, there's nothing scientific about it. I just move them left and right until, you know, I see it get either better or worse. So in this case, right? I'm sorry?
The white balance adjustment is the same white balance adjustment you have on
monitors. Well, monitors don't actually have a white balance adjustment. What they have is a white point setting. So you tell the monitor, you know, when the computer tells you to display white, I want it to look like the sun outside, or I want it to look like the sun outside on a cloudy day, or something like that. But you're not actually adjusting the white balance of the monitor. So, okay, so it turns out moving this yellow slider over makes it look pretty good, although not on that. Unfortunately, our projector is very poorly calibrated. So anyway, you know, I can move the magenta slider over and see, you know, if it helps, or the green slider. Okay, green, usually you don't want to add green to a picture, because pictures of people look very bad if they're green. Again, cyan can kind of make people look sickly, but red, yeah, red, you know, makes people look normal. So if you look at the picture up here, you can see that that looks like much more natural skin tones than what we had before. And if I undo, you see this looks like, you know, nice-looking people. And in comparison, this looks like kind of sick-looking people, right? But we're not done. We can still do levels. I'll move my white point over here. And now it looks like the room was fairly bright, right? And I can adjust this slider here till I see something that looks good. And I might say, okay, well, I want the face to be really light, but that makes the picture washed out. So then I'll take my black slider and move it in. So instead of having a washed out picture, it's a nicely adjusted contrast. And you can see the difference here before and after. Unfortunately, it doesn't look as good on the projector as it does in real life, but we'll just have to live with that. Okay. And let's go to the next thing here. Hue, saturation. I will open a picture here. Okay. So for people who don't know color theory, hue is basically what we call color. Like red is a hue, green is a hue, blue is a hue, white and black are not hues. And saturation is basically the difference between brown and yellow. So a really saturated brown is actually yellow, and a very unsaturated yellow is brown. And so what we have in this case is a fairly ordinary looking picture of some pastels. And first thing we'll do is do some levels. And you can see we have plenty of room to move this white point over here. And now we've got some nice brighter looking pastels. But allow us to go to the hue and saturation adjustment dialog here. And you see, we can shift the hues, which very rarely does anything useful. We can increase the saturation, which makes it very bright and colorful, or we can desaturate it all the way to black and white. In this case, we want colorful. So I can drag it out to, say, here, and we've got a nice, much more lively image. So from a little bit dull to more lively. Unfortunately, this projector doesn't show it as well as I would like it to. Okay. Okay, so now we have an interesting technique here. You know, a lot of people love to take pictures with film instead of digital because of, you know, the look of black and white film. And fortunately, the digital photographers there are at parity with them because you can make anything look just the same as they can. And let me show you how. Okay. So, every image in a computer is composed of three channels, a red channel, a green channel, and a blue channel. And in fact, if we go to the channels window here, then Photoshop will allow me to select them and show you. So this is what the red channel looks like. This is what the blue channel looks like, green channel, and here's the blue channel. And one thing that you'll notice is that the skin tones and the red channel look very, very smooth. It turns out that most people's blemishes and their skin are actually in the green and blue channels, and we can use that to our advantage here. So, let me show you the feature called the channel mixer. Now, what this particular feature does is it allows you to individually mix the red, green, and blue channels however you want. And in this case, you want to make it monochrome. And tell it how much of each channel to add in to make a nice-looking picture. And so let's say you can choose this. Can you? It's aliens invading. Feedback. Okay, so we've successfully mixed our channels to go from decent color to nice looking black and white. And of course, then we can go into our levels here and adjust it as we see fit. And you might say, gee, that's a funny looking picture. There's a out of focus baby's head and somebody's wrist and a watch. I don't like that so much. Well, that's where cropping comes in. We just select the interesting part here. And now it's a cute little picture of a baby's hand holding her mommy's hand instead of the funny looking out of focus baby and some hands, right? So, what I thought I would do is look at some audience-submitted pictures here and demonstrate these techniques with, you know, other people's average-looking images. As it turns out, I'm not so good at making average-looking images. So. You mean, do I have internet access? Oh, okay. Well, here. This gentleman gave me his compact flash card, so I will look there to see if... Oh, we lost our VGA. Okay. Drive E. Okay. Can we access it? You may not be able to access the... you can access it. Okay. Photoshop's dialogue is... not very good. Okay. So, here's a photo. Right? It's a guy in a room at a HackerCon. We've got, this funny-looking curtain in the back here, this column, window, distracting out-of-focus foreground image. We can fix it. There we go. Right? See, it's no longer... you know, a guy sitting in a room. It's a picture of a guy communicating. And we can crop it further. Okay. So, now we can go into our levels here. Make his skin tones look nice. Okay. And now let's check out our saturation. Bring out the color in his skin. Okay. So there you go. But maybe you say, gee, you know, I think it makes a much better statement if it's in black and white. So, you know, so let's say we do some red. Now, it turns out the least amount of noise on a digital camera is in the green channel, because there's twice as many green pixels as there are red and blue. So, in this case, we'll up the green channel a lot. A little bit of blue. Okay, so now we have a, you know, nice piece of artwork instead of, you know, just the guy in the middle of a room giving a finger. And here we can... show what it looked like before and after. Well, actually, I guess, to be fair, we really have to show the whole thing, right? Before and after. Before and after. Okay. Exactly. Exactly. Okay, let's see if... is that bad? That's kind of a cool effect, right? See, if we look at the different color channels, we can see where the smoke comes out the best. Right, you can see this is a red channel, which you can see because it says red up there. There's green, and there's blue. And in this case, it looks like blue is the best channel for the smoke here. Now... this is sort of tricky. How do we crop this? Well, we can get rid of the distracting bed and people. Does this help? There we go. And then we can bring out the smoke effect. Well, okay, so there's not much you can do with this picture. But there's a quick demonstration of it. Let's go to a... let's see, thumbnails. Okay. Now again, what's the first thing we do? Crop. Okay, and then so we draw out our box. Now, as it turns out, you can quite conveniently resize it like so. And at least in Photoshop, you can rotate it like this in case your image is, you know, not exactly plumb. And we double click to get our nice crop box. And unfortunately, there's a fellow back here who's kind of hard to see. So maybe if we take our gamma, it gets a little easier to see, but the room gets washed out. So we increase the shadow, and now we have a face you can see and more contrast. Now, of course, there's all kinds of other great things you can do, like, you know, you can remove this guy's red eye and, you know, take some pictures of him where his eyes are open and copy them over here. But, you know, that takes lots of time. Who's got time for all that, right? We got pictures to process. You know, we want to be done in 5 minutes or less. Okay. No, red eye, actually, there's a red eye removal function. That's not one of the most important 5 features of Photoshop. Although, if your image does have red eye, I recommend removing it. Ah, okay. Nice landscape of a city.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
At some point, could you please explain layers? Because I get really lost.
Layers. Okay. Well, here. I will process this image and show some idea of how layers work. Okay. So you'll notice this picture's got lots of black stuff on the top, which we really don't care about. So we just crop it out. And now we have a nice panorama of, I don't know, parking lot, the city, whatever. And we can lighten things up here so we have more detail. And there you go. We got a nice panorama of the parking lot. Took almost no work. Before I forget, I will eject this guy's... Ooh. That's what you think. Okay, did anybody bring any more images for me to look at?
I've got some on the web.
Okay, sure. Oops. Let's not go there. Okay, what's your website? /? Okay, does that look right? Yeah. Oh, okay. Do you know your IP address? Maybe that doesn't matter. Okay, let's go to properties. Do you know a DNS server? Okay. Let's restart Internet Explorer. I'm up. Okay. And a USB key? Huh, bring it up. Even better. Okay. Drive, okay. USB, okay. Oh, you want okay. What do you want me to look in? There's. Which one? And there's one guy. Should we look at that? Oh, no, okay. Oh, okay. Well, here. Let's copy, paste. Okay. So here's a nice image, but to me it looks a little bit dull. And if we go in here, we can make it lighter, increase the contrast, bring out some more detail. Okay. And I don't know about you, but the building in the background is kind of distracting me. So, as a matter of fact, I would crop it even tighter. Unless you need to show the context of, like, say, what building it's in front of, you don't need the building, right? People are going to look at the building instead of your subject here. So, make it as tight as we want. Now, it's much better. Well, maybe not much better, but it's better than it was before. So, let's see if there's any other good pictures. Oh, this is interesting. Well, it looks like that was intentional. Here's another picture. And again, in crop, do we really need the back there? Back of the chair? No, because that's really what's important. All the other stuff on the sides, not important at all. Now, if I were taking this picture again, or if I were taking it the first time, I might think, gee, there's lots of space between them. Maybe I can get them to move closer, but hey, you know, you can't go back and retake the picture. So, got to work with what we have. In this case, cropping works. Let's see what this is. Ah, okay.
What's your garden with the dog?
Interesting. Sculpture garden. So in this case, I don't know, there's some lighting that we might be able to fix. Bring out some detail. Well, unfortunately, this is like a 0.02 megapixel image, so there isn't that much we can do with it. You know, what I would do if I had more pixels, I'd crop it right here, because we don't really need this tree. And believe it or not, we have this big, tall, vertical thing here, like this. It does not need to be in the center of the frame. As a matter of fact, I think it looks better with it off to the side there. Okay. Okay, now here's an interesting one. Paste. Okay, now you'll notice this isn't standing straight up and down. Maybe you don't want it to, maybe you do. In this case, we can fix that by rotating our crop box slightly and then cropping it. Right. Right. Now, there are other ways of rotating, but in this case, this is how I like doing it. So, and as a matter of fact, I think I want this this major sculpture to be more prominent in the frame, so I'll crop even more off here. And that's a much more artistic presentation than what we had before. You know, you may not agree, but if anybody would like to come up and try their hand at it, I'd be pleased to allow them. Nobody? Nobody wants to? Okay. Now, somebody before asked about layers. I must admit, you know, when they were first introduced in, like, Photoshop 3, I thought, you know, gee, things are just getting out of hand now. You know, there's all these complicated features, and they're bloating the software, but it turns out they're actually very handy. And here, let me give you a quick demonstration. Okay, so what we have here is a blank canvas. And this is called a background. You can put anything you want on it. In this case, why don't we add a little picture of a sculpture that we can move around. And as it turns out, this little image right here is a layer, like you know, like a piece of acetate or something like that sitting on the background. If I go to the layers channel here, then you can see this guy is corresponds to this layer. And now we can drag this other thing from Photoshop and voila. Now we've got two layers that we can move around. And see, they act just like different layers. And we can reorder them like this. So now this guy's on top. And the beauty of layers is that it allows you to have, it's essentially like having multiple objects in one image that you can move around. So you might, you know, you could easily, say, make a collage like this and be able to manipulate each individual picture as a separate object. And, you know, in this case, let's say we put this other guy on top, but you can change the layer's opacity so that you can see through it like that, right? And, you know, make it look like a watermark or something. And there's, let's see, what other kinds of things you can do. There's all kinds of awesome layer effects. Like, let's say, you know, we can give the thing a drop shadow, right? And if we zoom in, you can see layer's got a drop shadow like this, and we can move it around. The drop shadow follows it. It's attached to that layer. If we put it back on top, then you can see the drop shadow goes back on top with it. If you add text, okay, froze for a second. All right, so we can add text. That's also its own layer here. So you see, now we've got a text layer. And we can do all kinds of transforms. We can make it bigger, smaller, rotate it, and manipulate it just like it's you know, any other object. Now, before layers existed, once you type something into Photoshop and you hit enter, that's it. It's baked into your image. Now that it can be a separate layer, you know, you can take it, you can make it another font, you can add all kinds of you know, additional features like this. You know, we gave it a little outer glow, so now you can see it against the background. You can, you know, you could change the font, do all sorts of things, whatever the hell you want. Does anybody else have any other questions?
I've got one image in that presentation that has a mix where there's one half of it.
Oh yeah, okay. I see there's like 97 slides. Is this?
Go to the bottom left and see where it says the four grid.
Ah. Oh, okay. Well, here, I'll go back to the top and I'll page down. Did I miss it there?
Go forward. One more. Okay, on the middle left. Yeah, open up that one.
This one here?
Yeah. And the picture in the middle.
Okay. After that.
This is the only picture that exists of this particular piece, which is on the front end.
Okay. Now, I'd just like to point out something here. If you watch closely, when I go to File, make a new document, Photoshop fills in some numbers for what the width and height of that new document is. And by default, it looks on the clipboard. So it will automatically create a new image the same size as what's on the clipboard. So when I go to paste, there it is. It is exactly fitting in the new image. So, unfortunately, this is very pixelated, and you see there's lots of shadow on it. So, what I would do in this situation is use an adjustment that I didn't talk about, but it's called Shadow Highlight. And this is a very nice new feature of Photoshop, but it's not that universal. So, you know, I don't think you can use it in the GIMP or Image Magic. So, you know, I didn't talk about it, but. See, what it did is we've got these light areas here, which are pretty much okay already, right? But this area is in shadow, and it's kind of hard to see. If I activate this, though, then you see the shadow ends up with a lot more detail. And you can basically adjust how light you want it by moving this slider. And and you see it pretty much only affects the shadows. And you know, there's all kinds of you know, adjustments. You can just go crazy with it here. But that's what we have. Now, unfortunately, this particular image is actually scaled up from a much smaller image, and what I see here is lots of JPEG artifacts. So there's not that much that we can do to recover information from it, but it depends on what you're looking for. You know, we can look at, say, the different channels and see, well, that shadow is blue, which means we don't see it in the blue channel. Okay, so she asked me what file format I prefer. In what sense? For what purpose?
Say you know that you're going to want to scale the image later, really big and sometimes really small.
Okay. So if I want to scale the image sometimes big, sometimes small, what do I do? For one thing, you know, I've got a digital camera here. I take pictures with it. What format does that camera save the pictures in? I've got two choices. One is JPEG, which everybody knows and loves, and the other one is what they call RAW format, which is proprietary to, you know, to everybody's camera. And this RAW format is the best way to, you know, actually be able to get everything, you know, extract the last bit of detail out of your image. Unfortunately, life's too short for RAW. RAW files are a lot bigger because they don't get rid of data to compress it like JPEG does. So not only are the images bigger, that means that you can't fit as many of them on your card. It takes longer to download your card. When you download your card to your computer, it takes up more disk space. And if you take a lot of pictures, that disk space starts to add up. You know, I've got a 750 gig disk array, and it's got 30 gigs free, you know, that's, you know, shooting only JPEGs. If I was shooting RAW, you know, I would need 2 terabytes of disk space. And then your other problem is most image programs can't open a RAW file. So everything can open a JPEG. And so that's why, you know, I take all of my pictures in JPEG. Now, once I've done editing like this, I might not want to use JPEG again because that will, you know, creating the JPEG in the first place was lossy. It threw out data. Saving it as JPEG again throws out different data. I might not want to. So I use TIFF. I use TIFF for that. PSD works just as well. It depends on what I'm going to do with it. Usually I save my images to send them to the photo lab, and my photo lab doesn't want PSD files because of all these layers, right? You know, if I turn off this layer here, it's still in the file, but it doesn't show up. So when I save it, you know, I'm saving all of those layers, whether they show up or not. And when the photo lab gets it, they don't know which, you know, if I accidentally turned off this layer or, you know, or if, you know, I want the white image. And so they have to open up in Photoshop, figure out, you know, what it is I really want, and then you know, I've just sent them a 200 meg file when, you know, a 2 meg JPEG would have given them, you know, the exact same amount of data.
I'm just saying I save it as PSD for safekeeping, and that makes what I need
for that. Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, you can save it as a PSD, you know, which is great because it keeps all of your different layer settings here. I certainly don't recommend against PSD files, but I do a lot of batch processing with the Image Magic suite, and Image Magic doesn't support the Photoshop format very well because it's proprietary. There isn't a lot of good documentation on it, so I just assume leave everything in TIFF and JPEG. But by all means, PSD is fairly universal, and it's completely lossless, which is pretty much something that a lot of people like in their image formats. Are there any more questions? Yes.
What about layer masks?
Layer masks. Okay. Well, what he's talking about is I can draw a I draw an ellipse here. That's a selection, you know. I can delete it or move it around, whatever. What I can also do here is create a layer mask. So what I've done is, I created a selection, turned it into a layer mask, which basically means that you see everything here that's white on the mask is what shows through for this layer. Everything that's black shows through the background. And you saw how I created it just by having a selection and clicking here. And of course, you can go back, you can change it, disable it to see what your image was like. All right, does that answer your question? Oh, well, specifically for something like that. Now, in this case, that seems like it's pretty pointless. But, sorry. Allow me to demonstrate. Okay, does anybody know what a vignette is? Okay, so that's basically taking the images and making it fuzzy. So I will show you this, and then I will be done. Okay, so now instead of having a sharp outline, see, there's a nice fuzzy outline. And that's, that's pretty much the primary use of layer masks, as far as I can tell.
Do you use a layer mask to scan colors or something?
No. No. I can show you how after.
I can show you one just from an infrared scan.
Oh, okay. Oh, great. Yeah, well, you guys can probably turn on the lights because this is sort of over. But the way these cameras work is instead of having a CCD or CMOS image sensor, they have like an array of little metallic heat sensors, basically. And so the lens focuses the infrared light onto the little heat sensors. They heat up and okay. So is this like one of the? These cameras are expensive, though. They start out at like $5,000 and go up to like $50,000.
$24,000.
Is it liquid cooled or room temperature? Oh, well, just to get higher precision.
Yeah.
Cool it. Okay, so let's. Hey, it's right. Okay, so when you say expanding the colors, what did you mean by that? Ah, okay. See, so what I did is I went into levels and changed the gamma.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Feel free to hand out those tickets. So, okay, so does that answer your question?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. Well, here, I will. Stop my thing here. Let other people...